Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back. Thanks for listening. 888-914-9149. That's the number to call to be on the program. Love to talk to you. I got an email this morning. Where did it go? I had it here a second ago. And this was from, I had it here a second ago. Somebody who wanted to hear a debate I had with a famous atheist. And as far as I'm aware, there is no such debate, unless you're thinking of somebody who called the program, maybe an atheist who called the program. And I'll tell you how to find that. It's really easy. Just go to the show page, go to relevantradio.com/Patrick. That's important. And then in the search bar, just put in atheism or atheist, and any recent program in which that was a topic, including if there was a caller who identified as an atheist. And I kind of remember there was one in the last month or so. You'll be able to find it. It'll pull up all the different shows and you can listen to your heart's content. So that's the way. Anything you hear on the program that you'd like to go back to, if you have a keyword, you want to find out what actually was said, etc., you'll be able to find it that way. And I do appreciate that email. If you want to send me an email, by the way, just go to the same page, relevantradio.com/Patrick, and you can send me an email. I had an email yesterday from somebody who said, how do I email Patrick Madrid? And I responded, you just did. What can I do to help you? So it's the easiest way to do it. When you go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, click on connect and then click on send me an email. It comes directly to me. Here's one that came in from Joe. He says, Patrick, last week you stirred up a long-lost issue that I had dealt with when I was a young married man, and it was the topic of bankruptcy. And after hearing your explanation, I felt that I had denied someone or a company money that I owed them. After hearing that, I did feel rather guilty for not making a better effort to pay my debts and was not a very wise man during that time and for many years afterwards. You're describing most people, by the way, Joe, so don't feel too bad about it. He says, by the grace of God, I have learned many good lessons and have been determined to meet all of my obligations and not get overextended. Now, I have a situation. He says he has power of attorney for his deceased mother. And a company, he says, is asking me to pay for an item that was installed in my mother's home and in her name. What obligation do I have to pay this debt, which is not a small amount to this company? Even though this is not my obligation, I feel compelled to pay my mother's debt. I realize there is more of a legal question, though morally speaking, it stirs my gut because a company will be out there. They will be out their cost for the installation of this item in his mother's home. He doesn't say what the item is. I presume it's maybe an appliance or something. And he finishes with God's blessing on all the staff at Relevant Radio. I've been a loyal listener since Relevant Radio opened a station in Austin. That's our 970 AM station. So thank you for that, Joe. Well, yes, I do remember that conversation from a couple of weeks ago, or last week, I guess, in which we talked about the morality of bankruptcy. It is a legal remedy, so it's not illegal to declare bankruptcy, but we discussed briefly the morality of it. And even though you have the legal option to declare bankruptcy and discharge those debts, is it morally the right thing to do? Because injustice, even though you're on hard times, you still have an obligation to pay what you owe. So it's a matter of justice. And that's what we were discussing, kind of looking at it from different perspectives. So in this case, here's my take on what you wrote. It seems to me that since you have power of attorney over her estate, and since that's not really your money, I mean, in a strict sense, maybe at some point it will pass down to you as an inheritance or something. But for the time being, at least, I'm assuming that your role is to settle her estate and wind everything up and then close it out. And that would include paying for bills outstanding. So if indeed she ordered this, and if it's there in the house, I mean, they wouldn't put something in the house if she hadn't ordered it, I guess. In that case, it seems to me that the best thing to do is just pay it, because then you don't have to not only go through all the hassle of dealing with a company that wants its money, and if they, in good faith, sold your mother this item, whatever it is, and installed it, well, they had to pay their people, and of course, whatever the item cost them, and the profits that they would lose, etc. So I think rightfully, the only thing to do is to pay that. And that way, the second thing is you won't have to have that nagging little voice bothering you. You already know what that's like now. We all do. So it's a nice thing to not have to worry about that. So if you pay this debt, then it's over and done with. Sure, be less money perhaps that would go into the pool that might pass down to you by way of an inheritance. But who needs the aggravation, right? And who needs the guilty conscience voice? You don't want that. So that would be my take on based upon what you said. I have a feeling once you do it, you're going to feel great. It's always good to do the right thing. 888-914-9149. This one is an email came in this morning from Anonymous, and she's listening in, or she's actually listening on the Relevant Radio app. It's about Botox. She says, is Botox a sin? Being truthful, for cosmetic purposes, it isn't changing your body. It just stops your muscles from moving at full motion, I believe. Is this permitted by the church? Thank you. Well, Nicole, the church doesn't have a doctrine about Botox per se. The church says that, as a basic moral principle here, that you can make use of medical therapies, even at times perhaps surgery if necessary, to perpetuate, to restore, and even under some circumstances to enhance somebody's health. Now, by enhance, what I mean is, let's say that you're perfectly healthy and you don't have a medical issue, but you find that you feel unsightly because your eyelids are drooping, I don't know, or your forehead is creased. And it could be that you are a weather presenter. You're the meteorologist on the local affiliate television station. And part of your job is to look presentable for the general public. And if you felt as though something about your face was not quite right, I mean, the church doesn't say that you can't do things like that to enhance. But it can be taken too far, and it certainly can be taken too far when it's on the basis of vanity. I think we talked about that yesterday. Keeping in mind that the church says that there are what are called capital sins, and among the worst of the capital sins, or the chief of the capital sins, is pride. And vanity is a form of pride. It's an exterior form of pride in which you want people to, oh, look at me. And so on. So for that reason, no, I would say the church's general moral principle here is no, something like Botox in itself, it's not a sin. I mean, it's not, as far as I know anyway, I've never had any use for Botox, probably never will. But as I understand it, Botox is like a form of botulism. And it, what does it do? Like it paralyzes. And maybe that's what you meant when you said that it stops your muscles from moving at full motion. It also causes inflammation. So by the tissue that's affected by the Botox becoming inflamed, then the wrinkles go away. At least that's my understanding of it. So if you're using it because it's something that would be reasonable and you're doing it because you want, you know, maybe to preserve your beauty for as long as you can, for the sake of your husband, let's say, I just don't think the church would say thumbs down on that. But if it's winding up distorting your, and look at some of the people who have had, as they say, a lot of work done, and they're unrecognizable. They look in some cases hideous because of so much work, plastic surgery, etc. And I think the church's moral principle there would be, you're going too far. You're harming your body. Yeah, this is probably the sin of vanity. So under circumstances like that, the church would say, no, don't do that. You're hurting yourself, and it's also not good for your humility. So that's, I guess, the best way I can answer the question. It gets down to these basic moral principles, and if you can apply those in a given situation and say, yeah, I'm doing this for these reasons, and it seems reasonable. I think that's how the church would say this. And if you say, well, I'm just doing this because I want to look extra pretty whenever I go out, then maybe start thinking about, is this vanity? And if you can say, yeah, this is probably vanity, then maybe say, I'm not going to do that. That's my take. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Charles now in Waco, Texas. You're first up this morning, Charles. Welcome.
I was hoping you could explain a little bit, what exactly do sacramentals like the Miraculous Medal and the St. Benedict Medal do? Because I know, we're not supposed to believe that, like, they're like an amulet, whereas like a piece of metal is actually, you know, driving out demons or something. But I know it's very common. People would say, like, you know, if you think that you have some diabolical influence in your life, wear a Miraculous Medal, wear a St. Benedict Medal. So how are we supposed to understand what they actually do without being superstitious? Because if they do nothing, I'm not sure I understand what the purpose is, besides like a reminder that, you know, we love the saints, like the Blessed Virgin Mary and things like that.
Okay, that's a really good question. I guess I would start off by saying this. The sacramental, and there are various forms of it, the blessing from a priest, blessing yourself with holy water itself, a crucifix, the Bible, genuflecting, blessed candles. These are all examples. The Miraculous Medal you mentioned. These are all examples of sacramentals. And they are signs and only signs. In other words, unlike the sacraments, which are signs, but they actually accomplish what they signify. They have power, the power of Jesus Christ within them, and they are effective instruments of communicating grace to us. The sacramentals are not like that. They are, in the analogy that I come back to frequently, is that of a wedding ring. So to use your question here, if you're saying, well, by having a Miraculous Medal or blessing myself with holy water to drive away evil spirits, which they can do indeed, it would be the same, or at least analogously, it would be the same as your wedding ring would drive away women who would like to hit on you, and when they see that you're wearing a wedding ring, they stay away. Now, it's not an exact analogy, it's not a perfect analogy, but I think they're kind of like that. I think they function in that way. The wedding ring doesn't make you married. It's a symbol. It doesn't cause what it symbolizes. So if you put on a wedding ring, let's say you're a single man, you put on a wedding ring, it doesn't suddenly make you married. But it is a sign of an inward reality, and the signs can be very powerful against, in the case of the demons, those who would try to harm you. And when you wear that sign or display that sign, it is a way to discourage them from harassing you. Now, it doesn't always work, and it's not, as you say, a good luck charm. It's not as though it's you put on your Miraculous Medal and suddenly now you're invincible. You're not. It's a reminder to you of your devotion to Our Lady in the case of a Miraculous Medal. Or if you're blessing yourself with holy water, it's a reminder to you and anyone around you, including demons, of the victory of Christ over death. And so it's understood in that sense by the church. They don't have power within themselves. They're not magical. They're not talismans. They're not they're inert in any sense of power, unlike the sacraments. And yet these signs are very helpful for reminding us and for also reminding others, including the demons. So in short form, that's probably the easiest and quickest answer I can give you.
So could you maybe explain how we could understand what I know is so common, like, you know, maybe if you know someone that's living a life that would open them up to diabolical influence, you know, almost anyone, and I think I may have even heard you say something like, give them a St. Benedict medal or even like put one in their house. Mm-hmm. How can we understand what the effect of that would be?
Yeah.
Like maybe putting one in the house, you know, maybe they don't even know it's there, but what exactly are we doing by that act?
It'd be the same thing to my mind as if you were working in an office setting and you're a married man and there's a cute woman who works in the same building, same office as you, and she really likes you. And so she's flirting with you and whatnot. So if you put a picture of your wife on your desk and she comes into your office to flirt and she sees a picture of your wife, that's it's an analogous way of putting her, letting her know that you are not available. You know, in other words, a picture of your wife or the two of you together on your wedding day or something like that. You know, it's a sign that tells other people something about you. It doesn't make you married. It's a symbol of something that's real, but it doesn't cause that. So a St. Benedict medal, holy water, blessed salt, things of that nature, which can be placed in places surreptitiously, you know, where nobody knows that this room has been blessed, perhaps. So in that case, those sacramentals would function not so much for the human being, but rather to show the fallen angels, the demons, that this room has been consecrated, or that these people are followers of Jesus. And they, you know, it functions in that way. I feel as though I'm over repeating myself at this point. Let me read to you what the sacramentals are described as in the Catechism. And this, by the way, is in paragraph 1670. Sacramentals do not confer the grace of the Holy Spirit in the way that the sacraments do, but by the church's prayer, they prepare us to receive grace and they dispose us to cooperate with it. For well-disposed members of the faithful, the liturgy of the sacraments and sacramentals sanctifies almost every event of their lives with the divine grace which flows from the paschal mystery of the passion, death, and resurrection of Christ. From this source, all sacraments and sacramentals draw their power. There is scarcely any proper use of material things which cannot be directed thus toward the sanctification of men and the praise of God. So, in a sense, it's sort of restating the point that I made, but I run the risk, I suppose, of repeating myself further. But were there any other aspects of this that you were wondering about, or did we at least cover it?
No, I understand, and I'm sorry if I drag you on a little long.
No, it's not that. It's more me, because I'm trying to give as thorough an answer as I can, and I don't want, inadvertently at least, to leave anything out that somebody will send me an email in 20 minutes and say, you forgot to say this, or you didn't say that.
Okay.
So it's just me trying to give you a comprehensive answer.
I got you. I appreciate the help, Patrick. Thank you.
You're welcome, Charles. Thank you. All right, you know what that means. We're going to take a timeout and then come back to it. I want to talk to you. If you want to talk to me, I want to talk to you. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Is your kid always on social media? Well, I got a little bit of news about that you might find interesting right after this. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. If you're in the market for health insurance, our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is here to help you and your family find the most cost-effective plan. Learn more at relevantradio.com/forester.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Cyrus, do you remember, I don't know how long ago it was, the last week or so, I got a call from somebody who was wondering about working at a store that sells Plan B contraceptives.
I do remember that, yeah.
Remember that? A buddy of mine just texted me a link to, it's actually, I think it's on the app, the Relevant Radio app. So there's an article, and that's courtesy of John Hanratty, by the way, our star, one of our star writers here at Relevant Radio.
He does really good work.
He really does. And so anyway, I just wanted to let you know, and I didn't know about this until my friend sent it to me just a moment ago. And so that's up there. So the title is it okay for me to work at a store that sells Plan B? So if you work at Walgreens or CVS or Walmart or whatever, and they're selling that stuff, what's the moral requirement for you? And I talk about that, and it's now available, the audio and the article. So well done, John. Thank you. And also, shout out to my friend who sent it to me, because I didn't even know that we had that out there. So that's good. 888-914-9149. We'll go now to Joe in Minneapolis. Hello, Joe. What do you know?
Hey, how are you this morning? I'm supposed to say only hi, but I'll say a blessing to you also.
Thank you.
You're welcome. There's a website called, I can't pronounce it, but A-U-X-I-L-I-U-M.
Auxiliorum.
Christianorum.
Christianorum. Yeah. Auxilium Christianorum. It means help of Christians. And it's, I haven't seen it, but it's probably associated with Our Lady. But that's what it means in the Latin, help of Christians.
Right. And it's a website of people praying for, kind of heavy, but praying for priests who are exorcists. So they're praying for them. And then in the blessing from it, other people, lay people, are come under that umbrella. And it's solid. I mean, the blood of Christ, litany, Jesus, Mary, Joe. So one of the things that I had, so in it, so the blessing, it's an issue about hate. So there's two, like Mary crushing the head of Satan. Mm-hmm. Is one, you know, so it the prayer is, you know, and I don't communicate very well, but so it's kind of like, I think of Mary as my sweet mother, and, you know, but I don't think of her as a warrior. And then the second is an issue in Psalm 139, and the last stances, it talks about hating evil and hating people who are, you know, heathens or whatever. I just wanted to get a perspective, your perspective on, so would I be right that Mary's, she, by using or utilizing her blood, the angels, is that how she's battling? So it's not so much a hate of Satan, but that's kind of in some Catholic tradition, her role to protect the church by battling the evil one. So with that, I'll just hang up, and again, blessing. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Joe. You don't have to hang up. I mean, if you want to hang on the line, that's fine, but whatever you prefer. So let's approach it this way, that all the baptized faithful who are in the state of grace have a role to play in what's known as spiritual warfare. I know you know the term. Not in the manner that an exorcist would deal with these things. Exorcist is a ministry of the church that is for clerics, and in most cases also, it's for clerics who have been specifically delegated that authority by their bishop. But by virtue of baptism and being in the state of grace, you have a role to play in doing battle with the evil one. And what's interesting is one striking passage that comes up all the time is in 1 Peter chapter 5, where St. Peter says that the devil is like a roaring lion prowling around looking for someone to devour. He says to be sober and steadfast and resist him. So that description, seems to me, is the way in which we can, as lay people, consider our role in spiritual warfare, proactively through praying and also in terms of resisting him, resisting his lies, resisting his attempts to seduce, resisting his temptations, etc. So we have an active role to play, but it's not in the same way that, let's say, an exorcist would function. So with that as a foundation, we can say that because Mary is the first Christian, she's the very first person to find out about Jesus from the angel Gabriel in Luke chapter 1. She's the very first person to go tell somebody about Jesus. In fact, she literally brought Jesus with her to her kinswoman, Elizabeth. She was the very first person to spend, you know, countless uninterrupted hours and weeks and even years with Jesus, being with him day to day as she was. So par excellence, Mary is she is the first Christian, she is the best Christian, and so on. But you'll notice that in her capacity as the mother of the Savior, as the mother of God, she doesn't do overt battle with the evil one. In fact, she turns to the stewards at the wedding at Cana in John chapter 2, and she says, do whatever he tells you. So she's pointing to Jesus. Now, I think this is where we can zero in on what I believe is the answer to your question. Mary is indeed a warrior, but she's not a warrior so much in a direct sense as because of her son and what he does through her fiat, her let it be done unto me according to thy word, as she said to the angel Gabriel when the Annunciation took place. So if to hearken back to the crushing of the head that you alluded to, we see the allusion to this or even the statement of it in Genesis chapter 3, verse 15. I will put enmity between you and the woman, God says to the serpent, between your offspring and her offspring. You will strike at his heel and he will crush your head. Now, some translations will use the feminine, but in the Hebrew, it's actually a masculine pronoun. And I am not a Hebrew scholar, but I do try to pay attention to people who do know what they're talking about so I can learn from them. And it has been pointed out that although it is a Hebrew word for he will crush your head, some say, and I'd have to go back and look at it to see if it's also could be translated in the neuter form. But in any case, Our Lady is indeed part of that crushing of the serpent's head because of who her offspring is, and that's Jesus. And so when St. Jerome translated the Latin Vulgate is what he translated the Hebrew and the Greek into, I think it was then that we begin to see a kind of emphasis on the Marian dimension of Our Lady participating in the crushing of the head. And we see some Old Testament examples. These are types of Mary in the Old Testament, just as Moses was a type of Christ and the manna in the desert was a type of the Eucharist. The word type in this context just means like a foreshadowing or a prefigurement. It's not perfect or complete the way what will fulfill that type is, but it's still something we can see in the Old Testament that's pointing forward. And so we see Judith, for example, the great heroine of Israel, who she didn't crush the head of King Holofernes, but she cut it off. She went to his tent, him thinking that he would seduce her, and she went to conquer him by cutting off his head. There's also Jael and Sisera, in which she too is a heroine of Israel, and she pounds a stake, like a tent peg, through his head with a hammer to kill him. He was one of the enemies of God's people. So we can see some glimpses of head-related injuries that were inflicted by women. And the church fathers who comment on such things, they draw the connection with Our Lady and her being the mother of the Redeemer. And the Redeemer is the one who crushes ultimately and completely crushes the head of Satan. But it's through her, yes, that all of this takes place. So Mary is a spiritual warrior, but not in the way that you might think of it, because we would typically think about exorcists and things of that nature. So she's quiet. She's the queen of the angels. And when I say she's quiet in Scripture, what we see of her shows her being lowly and humble and not out there battling and casting out demons. We don't see her casting out demons. Jesus doesn't send her forth to cast out demons. He sends his disciples to do that. And the inner circle of the disciples, the apostles, do that as well. But interestingly, we don't see Mary ever sent to do this. And it may be, I don't know, this is just conjecture, but it may be that the reason is because even just the very sight of her would be terrifying to demons, the way it was terrifying to them when Jesus would show up. You know, they would know that this is a somebody we don't want to be around. So I hope that's helpful to you, Joe. There's plenty of good literature on this issue. And if you were to go to, where'd you go? You might want to check out Tim Staples' book. It's called Behold Your Mother. And Behold Your Mother is a book that focuses on all the Marian doctrines. Now, this is not a Marian doctrine, but I wouldn't be surprised if I had to go back and reread that book if there may be something in there about this. So something to check out, Joe. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Eli.
What?
Eli in Escondido. Hi, Eli.
Hi.
Hi. You're on the air now.
Hi.
Did you have a question for me?
Yeah.
Okay. How old are you?
7.
All right. So what was your question for me then, Eli?
Do all sins go straight to heaven or do some go to purgatory?
That's a really good question. I think a lot of the saints go straight to heaven. And some of them we know for sure go straight to heaven when they die as a martyr. Do you know what that means? Martyr?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the church believes they go straight to heaven. Now, some of the other saints, maybe they had to spend a little time in purgatory before they went to heaven. We just don't know. We don't know for sure, but I don't think it's impossible. I think it's possible that some may had to go to purgatory for a little while, but I would guess most of them went straight to heaven.
Okay.
Your mom's helping you, isn't she? That's good.
Yes.
Well, tell her thank you for letting you call the program today. Was that the only question you had for me?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Eli, and be a good boy, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Beautiful as ever. 888-914-9149. How about Emily now in Northern Virginia? Good morning, Emily.
Good morning. So I just want to put out there as a disclaimer, I understand that perhaps when you gave the answer you did about the Botox, you know, maybe it was just because it's not necessarily having to do directly impacting you because you are a male, you know, and it's not, they're not, so that market's not necessarily, you know, headed.
And I'm on the radio, so Botox, even if I did use it, which I don't, you'd never know it. You'd never see it.
But I guess I was just saying, it just made me think a little bit because I've actually thought about this because I am surrounded, and we're, you know, most of us all in this modern American in your face culture. I've thought about this a lot because I have a lot of nieces and nephews that are young and I've seen their parent. It's just prevalent in my world, you know.
And you're talking about the Botox?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Yes.
Okay.
And I just think that it's kind of like a slippery. First of all, I do agree with the restorative procedures, you know, because that can lead to health, you know. You know, there's so many reasons why people need medical. We're not denying medicine, we're not denying science, you know.
Right.
But I guess I just feel like Botox is different because it was originally developed for migraines, and it's kind of like one of those where I just feel like it's tricky because there's other products that are not, you know, neurotoxins. And
I know, Stephen, sorry.
And I guess I just think, like, it's kind of a form of mutilation, you know? And not, you know, it's just, but there was one part where you said, like, for the enhancement, like, for the sake of your husband or beautifying yourself for the sake of your husband. I did have a question on that because I do agree that I want to know, like, I do care about that, like doing your best for your husband, you know, but I also just don't agree that I think there's more than one way to make yourself look good.
Yeah.
And that doesn't include Botox, you know?
Yeah.
So
I probably should add something here. I am not in any stretch of the imagination an expert on Botox. I've heard Botox a million and one times, but I had to look it up to make sure I understood more scientifically what it is. And it is a form of botulism, or it can lead to botulism apparently. And it causes paralysis, and it makes like facial lines, wrinkles and things go away because of the inflammation. Again, this is how I understand what I'm reading about this. So I don't have an animus against Botox per se. I really don't. And if you do, I'm more than happy to hear you out as to what it is about it that you find objectionable. But Let me give you a comparison, Emily. And I have to take a break, but I'd love to maybe talk to you on the other side of this break. You want to do that? Want to just hold for a minute while we take the break, and I'll come back.
Yeah, sure. Because okay. I do have a thing about and a thing I'm against it about. You know.
Okay, so, I'd like to hear what it is.
Yes, yeah, sure.
It's a topic I have not thought very much ever in my life about, but this will be good for both of us to talk it through. And I have a question for you relating to this kind of thing that has always puzzled me. So maybe you can help me with that as well. We'll take a break. We'll come right back to Emily. If you want to be on the show like Emily is, just give me a call. 888-914-9149.
Here's a waiver for you to sign.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Well, Here Comes My Girl would have been a better song choice, Cyrus, but...
Thanks for that two seconds of heads up you gave
I'll live
me about
with it
that.
If I have to. Okay, we're going to go back to Emily in Northern Virginia. Thanks for holding over the break, Emily. So we were talking about botulism. No, we're talking about Botox, excuse me. And you said there was something specific that you yourself have against Botox. And since I'm a neophyte in this area, I'd love to hear from your perspective what it is about Botox. Because I'm not promoting Botox. And for those who are just tuning in, if you're saying, what is going on here? I took a call the other day about, is it morally okay to use Botox for beauty? And I gave a few thoughts on it. And I talked about where it could become vanity. And so just sort of generically trying to look at it the way the church's moral principles would come into play. And Emily, you called up, and I hear an echo. I don't know why I hear an echo, but anyway, Emily, I'll let you take it from there and share with me what about Botox is particularly problematic in your view.
Okay, hi. I have a couple things that I have a problem with Botox. Firstly, it's not cheap. You know, it's not covered by insurance if it's not for migraines. And so you could be using those superfluous funds to help your brother in need, you know,
okay,
or sister in need. Second of all, there's other things like Restylane or hyaluronic acid, which is like a natural thing, and it'll fade away, you know, and not be some permanent blob that's in your face, you know.
Yeah.
But more importantly, I think about the spiritual component of these, you know, young people and older women that are employing this. And one, I think about the older women, and it's the same thing with our culture where women have these children who go off to college and then they just all become like people who sit around and drink wine all the time. When it says that, you know, a woman with wisdom and age is supposed to go and teach, you know, younger mothers and wives how to, what would be your best tips? You know, what are your top 10 takeaways for dealing with X, Y, and Z, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they could be using their time and money to be helping their own adult children or grandchildren or people in their community instead of turning navel gazing, you know? Secondly, there's a big movement for, you know, in our moneyed cultures, in this hypersexualized world, where these younger girls are putting these things into their faces, you know, and
this is where I had a question. Maybe you can shed some light on this for me. And I don't know really how to ask the question without. I hope I don't offend anybody. I really do hope I don't offend anybody, but I don't know how else to ask the question. I've noticed a trend, this has been going on for years, where some people apparently think it's beautiful for women's lips to be extremely enlarged. They look like duck lips to me. And I don't know if that's Botox or what causes that, but it's like it's an exaggeratedly puffy lips. I don't understand that. And to me, every time I see it, I think, why on earth would you do that? Now, I don't know if that fits in with the point that you're making about, you know, beauty and all that, but What is that? And is that also done by Botox? I see a lot of women wearing their lips that way.
Yeah, that's definitely number one culprit there is definitely Botox, you know. And the second one would be the more natural one, which is the Restylane. And but yeah, I think
it looks so strange. It looks so, I mean, it's like the opposite of beauty, if you ask me. I think many men kind of feel the same way, although I've never polled anybody, but I would have to think it does. So there's an example of a common or what's the word I'm looking for? Prevalent fashion that just strikes me as really odd every time I see it. And I assumed it was Botox. I just didn't know.
Yeah, I think they're trying and they reject themselves, you know, which again is not turning out, you know, turning toward Christ. It's turning toward the mirror, you know, and so they want to change how they look and it's just not helping anyone get to heaven, you know. And I guess I think of it like how we've had this rise of the occult, you know, and how, you know, people have, oh, I just have this little, you know, I've heard you talk about it and I really find it interesting when you talk about it, you know, about this slippery slope of that stuff. And I think of this Botox and these injections as kind of along the same lines. They're not medical, you know, they're not helping anyone. So they kind of think, oh, if I do this little potion, then I'm going to be
Let me play devil's advocate.
Object of my dissension, you know.
Let me play
whatever.
Devil's advocate. I don't disagree with you, but I'd be curious for the sake of those who might say, well, what about this? What about as a woman gets older and her hair begins to get gray? For some women, it happens earlier than others. And to, say, color her hair so that she has a younger appearance, would that fall into the same category in your view?
I think that, yes, to a degree, to really be philosophically aligned, I agree, because there's women who spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month, okay, to have everything, you know, done, you know, to make it all perfect. If there's, and that, like, also there's chemicals that you're exposing yourself to that are not helping you when you're like breathing in the fumes or whatever, you know?
Okay.
Now, I guess I think that if you're like you said, minor, if there's just safer ways to do these things, you know, that would basically help you age gracefully. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and to, because I did used to kind of have this idea like, oh, we have to be like totally humble and like make ourselves kind of look like not ugly, but just not so
made up,
not you, you know, I don't know. But
what about makeup, lipstick, eyeliner, just stuff like that, the basic things that women tend to wear? Do you look at those as also not proper? And I'm not trying to trip you up. I'm not trying to trap you. I'm just curious. I would, if I had to guess, most women probably don't agree with the take that you're taking. I agree with you that if you take it too far, it definitely crosses a line. But I don't think the average housewife is spending hundreds of dollars a month, but she probably spends, you know, whatever a box of Clairol costs, you know, to keep her hair in a more youthful appearance.
That's in balance, right? You know, I mean, that's a balanced approach. Like, I guess I just really do have a problem with Botox versus something like Restylane, which is like the hyaluronic acid stuff, you know? And I have because I really do think that it leads to more and more. I think it makes the person disfigured and it doesn't preserve what was there. It actually morphs it, you know? And it's
you and I, I think generally speaking, agree on this issue. Especially as we move into something that's beyond what could be considered reasonable. I can't help but thinking about these women who have had a lot of plastic surgery done, and they're just not only unrecognizable, but they have really distorted their appearance in the pursuit of this perfect nose or perfect cheeks or whatever. And now their natural beauty is gone, and it's replaced with this mask this sort of paralyzed mask that no longer looks like them. I won't say any names, but there's some famous women who are living that now because they went too far, way too far.
I guess I just thought about your person who wrote in or whatever, and how I just think it's like there are other methods that are more natural, you know, because we want to follow natural law, right? You know, as best we can. And
Well, natural law has nothing to do with this. That natural law has to do with what is the goal of a thing? Among other things, what is the purpose of a thing? And using things for the intended purpose and not using them in a way that would be contrary to their purpose. But anyway, we're short on time, so I'll let you wrap it up for us, Emily. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you guys are great. I appreciate you. I always love your tone of voice. It's always calm and good. Thank you for your relevant radio.
Thank you, Emily. Great chatting with you, and I hope we talk again. Let's go now to Denver and talk to Mary. Hi, Denver. Hi, Mary. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you, Patrick. I was kind of shocked you guys were talking about Botox, actually.
Me too. So I'm kind of shocked also. I didn't wake up this morning thinking I was going to talk about Botox.
That's so funny. I'm 47, so I'm obviously at the age where most women are doing this. I feel out of the norm. It's something that, luckily, I've worn a lot of sunscreen and hats, and I've been able to age gracefully, but this is something that I have struggled with a lot because so many women, almost all women, and now women are doing it in their 20s as preventative, they call it. Mm-hmm. When I talk to my husband about it, he's amazing, and he's more of just like the more natural thing, and he's kind of with me. I thought, I just couldn't imagine standing in front of the Lord, you know, like on my last day, you know, mm-hmm. and just
Are we talking specifically about Botox?
Yes.
Okay.
Specifically about plastic surgery in general, right? Like if there's something that happened to you, like you're in a fire or something like that, that's mm-hmm. obviously different.
Right.
But when we're just trying to mutilate and change our bodies, there's definitely things about myself that I look in the mirror and I'm, I wish that was a little different. But you know what? It was good enough for God, right? That's how he created me. And I think it's so hard for young women these days. It's impossible for them to mm-hmm. not fall into this pressure. It's like they hardly have any women they can look up to that are like, she's natural. She doesn't look horrible, you know? She's mm-hmm. naturally aging woman. This is how we're supposed to be. And I just, every time I thought about it in my spirit, I just felt, literally saw myself standing before God and was like, no, I can't do that. I cannot say this is okay. I know this would be okay with the Lord. I felt the opposite every time. And,
that's good. I think that is your conscience. It's telling you something like an instinct that this is not right. And maybe if you can't necessarily say exactly to what extent it's not, you have a sense that moving that direction is going in the wrong direction. St. Thomas Aquinas, for what it's worth, his opinion on this issue was negative as far as, here's the section. It's on modesty and outward apparel. And so it's question 169. The first article is whether there can be virtue and vice in connection with outward apparel. And his position is that you can be virtuous in your outward apparel, or you could be vicious, would be the contrary, but let's just say sinful, if you take it too far. In the next article, which is Article 2, whether the adornment of women is devoid of mortal sin. And his position is that in some circumstances, it could be seriously sinful, not only in terms of the styles of dress that women wear, but also it could go way into the area of inciting lustful thoughts, among other things, among other people. So I wish we had more time. I have to leave it at that. But that's interesting, and it might be worthwhile to read at length what St. Thomas Aquinas says on this. I'll get a link to this for you on the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. You can read what he had to say on this issue. Well worth looking at. I'll be right back.